If you're worried about your New Year's Eve kiss, just remember Valentine's Day is only 45 days away.
Let's be honest, Trish. You're still going to be alone.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
All right. Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can access that live stream every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Now, bear with me. This is a lot to read, so we're going to just try it, right?
Give it a go.
All right. So our guest tonight is, of course, Emerson Collins. He's an actor, a producer, and a TV personality who starred in four seasons of Bravo's hit social series, The People's Couch, and appeared as Steve in Rent on Fox. During the pandemic, Emerson produced and starred in a live stream benefit fundraiser reading of Del Shore's Sordid Lives with Leslie Jordan, Bo Bridges, Caroline Ray, Bonnie Bedelia, and Beth Grant, Dale Dickey, and many more of the original film's cast, along with appearances by Alec Mappa, Carson Kressley, Tony winner Levi Kreis, and, of course, Olivia Newton-John. The event raised over $83,000 for 23 nonprofit theater companies. He is our guest tonight, and he's going to join us on the second half of the show. My name is Tom, and I am your host. And joining me in studio today is, of course, my other amazing friend, darling, fierce bitch. Hi.
Hi, Nick or Trish.
And there you go. And so today, it's the dish. We're a little discombobulated, to say the least.
For why?
I don't know. I just don't know.
We were fine.
Like, I started everything early. I went through, set everything up, like, around 4 o'clock. We were trying to, you know, just get through it. And then we go live, and shit just hits the fan.
Lately, yeah.
And I love it.
Our intern.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Fuck her. But anyway, how are you, darling?
I'm good. You know, we just got through Christmas. It was weird.
That's right. Merry Christmas to everyone.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. But it felt so weird not being with my family,
right,
and them blowing up my phone every day because I wasn't there. Like, it was just kind of a weird thing. And then in Connecticut, we had like a weird storm. I was supposed to go see my brother, but I couldn't.
I almost ended up working.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. So it wasn't a snowstorm.
And Santa never came for me.
Why?
I don't know. I didn't even get coal.
Well, you got love. You got Wonder Woman.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Like, Wonder Woman was a thing. Mm-hmm. So we got together, obviously, because, you know, we're the only two people that we literally are the only two people that we hang around with when we're outside of doing the things that we need to, like, for example, going to work or
with the exception of one person.
Right.
Who shall not be named.
Right. Lord Voldemort.
we could call him that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
No, but we literally just hung out and watched Wonder Woman 1984. It was interesting, to say the least.
I loved it.
It was amazing.
I know you didn't like it.
No, it's not that I didn't like it. I love Gal Gadot. Did I say that right?
I think so.
Okay, thank you. I love her. I loved her in the original Wonder Woman film, which obviously was incredible and amazing on its own right. And the follow-up was, to me, they delved too much into the love story of Steve Trevor and Diana Prince. And they sort of kind of stuck on that storyline for way too long, and I wanted to see more action, right? Like, Gal Gadot is amazing at doing all these stunts.
Yeah.
And I just feel like I didn't get enough of that.
Oh, I thought that there was a lot of that.
Well, in the beginning, like, you see her as a little child when she's going through, you know, the trials to go through the course, which of course is in honor of one of the most valiant and one of their most amazing
warriors.
Yeah. And, you know, it is all in all, it was incredible. And if you haven't seen it, I won't go into it too much.
But I mean, I am Wonder Woman, so.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You literally like twirl and spin. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you this. When the movie credits start coming up, don't turn it off if you're watching it on HBO Max, right? If you have access to the movie like I did. Or if you're watching it in theaters, don't get up immediately and leave. Wait, there is a surprise for you guys, and I'm not going to ruin it for you.
That's like all of the movies lately. Like, now I skip ahead. Like, once the credits roll, I'm right. skipping ahead because I want to see whatever clip it's going to be.
So when we were watching it, immediately as soon as the credits started rolling, I turned it off and I went
and I was gonna say something to you, but we were like eating and like whatever,
right? And so I cut it off and I didn't realize that there was a whole other like amazing moment that we needed to wait for. So for those of you who haven't seen it, please stick around halfway through the credits. You're not gonna regret doing it. It was amazing.
It was a great cameo.
Yes, yeah. It was. That being said, let's move on. We've got some stuff. So I'm sure that our listeners, there's a lot of handy homos like me that like to do home projects and like to, you know, build walls and fences and all that other good stuff. And
that's just you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But if you are out there, keep in mind that if you've bought a ceiling fan from Lowe's in recent months, there's a recall. There's a recall because basically over 190,000 ceiling fans are being recalled because the blades, those nice little blades that attach to the fan that spin and cause that wonderful airflow to sort of kind of come down and keep you cool, they fly off. They literally come off.
So what I'm hearing is if any of our listeners actually bought one of those, send it here. I'm going to gift it to Steve.
Which one? All of them.
If you have three.
Send three fans. Either way, so the King of Fans, a Fort Lauderdale, Florida-based company that makes 54-inch Mars ceiling fans, announced a recall on Wednesday after receiving 47 reports of blades detaching. According to the statement from the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission, the fans have been sold at Home Depot stores nationwide. Two of those reports indicated a detached blade hit someone. The commission said four reports say a blade caused property damage. So there's possibility that you can get, you know, decapitated. So be careful. Be careful.
That is such a weird story.
And the thing is that I've installed fans. Like, you remember the fan in my living room in my apartment before I bought the house? Mm-hmm. I put that fan in, and I can only see a blade, like, swinging out and hitting Chris in the back of the head because he used to sit closest to to the living room when we were doing it on the dinner table. You remember that before we had a studio?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, Chris is not joining us tonight. He's home.
What is this, the fourth week? Third week?
Yeah, fourth week in a row. He's going through it. So that's all.
Again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's natural. It's okay. He'll be back at some point. Hopefully in the new year. But anyway, so yes, just be careful. Be very careful if you're putting up or if you have one of these fans, make sure that you go through the proper channels in getting it replaced because you don't want to end up without a head while you're either celebrating New Year's or just hanging out at home on the couch and all of a sudden a blade just smacks you in the face. Yeah. So
imagine having kids and like that popping off and
some mothers, some parents probably would get a thrill out of that.
Maybe.
Depending.
Maybe.
Like, you were bad. That's what you get. That's karma. Mm-hmm. No, but
I used to get the silver spoon, but
yeah.
Did you not ever...
the wooden?
No. So
no, my mother had a 2x4 behind the freaking washing machine.
Yeah. So what happened was my mother broke the wooden spoon on my brother's butt, and then she went to the silver spoon.
Oh.
So
because that one didn't break.
No.
Yeah.
Or bend.
Yeah. Poor Chris.
He. Yeah.
I can tell he was probably a very rough kid growing up.
Oh,
got into a lot of trouble.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. I did too. Well, I think that mothers always have those.
He also got the brunt of a lot of shit too.
Right.
Poor kid.
Yeah. And not to mention he was also a twin, right? So it's like double like the anxiety, the stress and the running around after a child. And
then I was born.
You don't want to hit the princess, but you weren't born yet. So you go after the boy instead.
I was a year and 2 months later. We were what they call Irish twins.
Right. Because your twin brother and sister, they're boy-girl.
Uh-huh.
Right? So I know that Amanda got away with murder compared to Chris.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I got away with murder.
So I wouldn't know what it's like to be either a twin or have a sister because we're three boys, which is why my mother had the 2x4 behind the refrigerator.
Yeah.
No, behind the washing machine. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
She claims that it was there to sort of kind of prevent the washing machine from shaking. And I'm like, Ma, all you had to do was level that shit.
Wait, hold on. Time out. Did you get hit with it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was horrible.
So she is 100% lying.
Of course.
It was. Yeah, okay.
Of course. But it would be, so you got to remember, it was there because it was preventing the washing machine from shaking. It wasn't there for hitting her kids or disciplining her children. I'm making my mother out to be like this old, like,
she's amazing. I love your mother.
A horrible woman, but she really is not. You could just have to understand we were three boys with a single mom, and we put her through the ringer. So mm-hmm. She had to be very stern and strong with us. And I know that there's a lot of people that say, you know, beating your children is not the ideal thing to do. But look at me, right? I ended up being...
Look at you.
Look at me. no, but then there was always that cable box too, right? You try to run, and that cable box back in the days that had like three rows of buttons and that little swatch thing that, mm-hmm. So if you wanted a channel on button one, you got to push the radio dial up to the first level and then you would pick your channel. And then for the second row, you go to the middle and then the end, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But that thing was on a cord and she could fling that thing and then reel it back and fling it again. It was, it was like she was, what do you call that? Fly fishing? But just smacking you with a cable box.
For young Hispanic boys.
Yes. Yes.
So, like, to be honest, like, moms don't get enough credit. They really don't.
They don't.
I was watching SNL, was it last week? And there was a skit with Kristen Wiig and a bunch of other people.
Which, by the way, she was in Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where she literally got a robe as a mother for Christmas and everybody was opening gifts and she was like, and I got a robe. And I got a robe. I'm going to go cook breakfast. Oh, I just burnt my hand. Like, literally, mothers do so much right. for their kids. If we got hit with a spoon a little bit, you know, it is what it is.
We're living. So you know how we always say, there is, you know, there's this generational gap where we talk about baby boomers in such a way that like they ruined our future for us, et cetera, et cetera. And so the current generation doesn't believe that beating your children or disciplining your children physically is the correct thing mm-hmm. to do, that there are other alternative ways and things that you can do to rectify behavioral issues. Mm-hmm. But that's not what we got. No. And we turned out okay.
Yeah.
Somewhat. But we did. And so, you know, it's a generational thing. Some people agree that, you know, yes, it's the right thing to do. No, it's not. Parents touch their kid. You can literally touch your kid now and literally get your child taken away.
Yeah, no, when we were in, elementary school?
Mm-hmm.
At one point, my dad used to fly us around. He would grab our hands and spin us.
Oh, Lord.
And my sister dislocated both her shoulders.
Oh, my God.
And she had told the story in class, and then DCF showed up at our house.
Right.
Like, my dad was not abusing my sister. He was literally playing with her.
And dislocated her shoulders.
Yeah. And DCF showed up, and my mom was like, get the fuck off my doorstep.
Right.
Right now.
Well, I mean, it is what it is. So that's that. So, no, my mother's not an evil woman. She was not... I would say an abusive mother. She was a just mother and she just needed to sort of kind of keep three boys in line.
Yeah.
And
with a fishing line.
Right.
And
fly fishing.
A 2x4.
And a 2x4 that sat behind the living room. So, well,
how did we get on this conversation?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Random combos. All right. So we still have a couple of stories that we have to cover before we go to break and bring our guest in. We're super excited, by the way. He is hilarious and awesome. And so I'm going to toss it over to Trish so that you can go ahead. Or do you want me to cover mine first?
It doesn't matter to me.
All right. So we have another story. This time, npr.org is the host of this particular story, talking about a gay veteran who remembers serving in silence. Decades before openly gay Americans were legally allowed to serve in the military, Joseph Patton, a gay man, served in silence. Patton, who died earlier this year at the age of 83, sat down for a StoryCorps interview in 2019 to talk about a time in his life that brought him both pride and pain. He enlisted in the Navy in 1955 at age 17, keeping his sexuality a secret for the entirety of his service. And he is quoted in saying, quote, "My dad told me going into service would help me be a man," which, thinking back to it, that was, you know, the go-to for a lot of parents, right? Especially men, especially machista men, men in Latino families would always try to, if they noticed that their children, especially their boys, were effeminate in any way, they would always try to make them do like manly things, like come work with on the car with me. Or
is that why my dad made me play football for so long?
Probably. You know, because he was like, no, you're not going to be a flamer. You're going to play football. You're going to hit by men. And little did he know. Yeah.
She's gay.
She literally shits rainbows.
I wish. Oh, my God.
So, you know, the interesting thing here is that his reasons for joining the Navy were a bit more lighthearted than trying to, you know, please his parents in being a manly man or whatever the case may have been. He basically said, quote, "I like the uniforms. They were tight and cute with bell bottoms." And then he was like, "Lord have mercy," you know, and I can see it. Right. There's there is a sense of allure when you think about uniforms, when you think about especially the Navy. You're right. Those bell bottoms and the way they hug those butt cheeks.
I used to go to New York during Sailor's Week all the time.
Oh, my God.
Best week ever.
Right. And they had like the best outfits. So I don't blame him. But anyway, as we know, in 1993, a Clinton era policy known as the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, took an outright ban on gay service members and replaced it with a policy that allowed homosexuals and bisexual people and even lesbians to serve in the military as long as they didn't reveal their sexual orientation. Of course, in 2010, President Obama signed the legislation that repealed that policy officially. And so when you think about the difference between serving then, right, prior to the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and during, and even before that, it just goes to show you the emotional and emotional scarring that happens as a result of having to suppress yourself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it goes beyond that too. I mean, outside of the military, right? I think as a society, we have this concept of what a man is and what a woman is, right?
Gender norms.
Right. And so, boys are raised to not play with dolls or be, be the strong one, be the adventurer, be whatever
dominant,
it is. Right.
Assertive.
And actually, that is such a toxic way to raise children. Not that I'm saying we should be like, be gender fluid, be who you are, right? I think it's important that parents embrace the reality that no matter who you are, whether you're gay, straight, whatever, doesn't matter. Human. You're human and you're going to, you know, every man should be in touch with his femininity and every female should have some, should be in touch with their masculinity, vice versa. Like there's no reason why a man can't cry, why a man can't feel, why did it take until my grandmother passed away for me to see my father cry? You know what I mean? Like things like that. Like my father, you know, you lift your dad up on a pedestal, no matter what you do, or your mother, whatever it is. But the reality is, you know how hard life is? I mean, when you're a teen, you're literally being an adult is being like a teen that survived being a teen.
Right.
You are damaged. You have issues. You have gone through things. You have fallen in love. You are trying to figure out what you like, what you don't like.
You got your hormones going bananas.
And then all of a sudden you're pushed to this like concept of adulthood. And we have to literally deal with the fact that our whole teen era, we are trained to be either masculine or feminine or embrace those qualities. When in respect and reality, we are trying to learn
who we are.
Who we are. Am I masculine? Am I feminine? Does mm-hmm. this work for me? How do I actually move forward with this, right? My father is not a feminine man by any stretch of the word, but that man should have been able to say, I'm not feeling good today and I need to cry a little bit.
Right.
Or, you know, like being able to cry or embrace femininity as a man is something that I think that this story is telling our generation right now, right?
Right.
Like, it's not about hitting your kids. It's not about this or that. It's about letting your kids embrace what and who they are.
Right. It's like, so you mentioned like your father, you know, you didn't see your father cry until your grandmother passed, right? Mm-hmm. Until his mother passed away.
Yeah.
And the notion that men can't cry or men can't hug each other and say, I love you, or things like that, because that seemed as weak or emotional, like men can't have an emotional reaction, to me, I think is just really asinine. I think that it would be healthier and we would have a much healthier society.
Oh, 100%.
If men were allowed to look at their straight counterparts or gay counterparts and look them straight in the eye and say, dude, I love you. I love you. Oh my God, I am emotional. I need to cry. Be my rock. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And be able to share an emotional connection with someone when there is nothing sexual about that, right?
Yeah.
The notion itself of crying itself is the body relieving and releasing.
It's therapeutic.
Stress, anxiety, mm-hmm. All of these things. Like when you hurt, you cry. That is a normal reaction of the body, regardless if you're a man or a female.
And when you hold it in,
you become depressed and can lead to a lot of underlying behaviors that could be very toxic mm-hmm. for your partner, for your children, and for those that you engage with every day.
Yeah, I think also too, I mean, when, you know, men are taught to hold their emotions in, and so when you get to a certain point in life and realize, I don't want to continue to compare to my family, but you realize that there are certain people that need to deal with some of the stuff right. they haven't dealt with.
Right.
And as a man going to a therapist, a lot of men have a really hard time with that. A lot of women do too,
right.
but statistically, more women are apt to go see a therapist than men.
Right.
And I think that has to do with society's norms. And the reality is, if a woman is going to see a therapist, a man should too. Like,
right.
Literally everyone changing, needs a therapist.
But that's changing though, because I'm starting to see a shift in the narrative, right? When we talked about therapy, we talked about being crazy, right? Back 25 years ago. The notion that you would talk to someone or a shrink, like they used to call them, was associated with being mentally unstable.
Yeah.
Mentally.
When I came out, I was sent to a shrink.
Right. And so there was always a bad thing associated with seeing someone, a therapist. Mm-hmm. People would think, oh, well, you're not crazy. Why would you go see a therapist? I'm like, you don't go see a therapist because you're crazy. You go see a therapist because you need to work through things to make you a better person. But that narrative is changing. We're starting to see that in a lot of the commercials that are being put out nowadays mm-hmm. Regarding therapy and showing people, like, for example, Michael Phelps, who's doing a lot of commercials for Talkspace, which is one of the online virtual therapy spaces, which could be beneficial. And when you think about,
especially now of all times
in pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just incredible that we're starting to see that shift. And I think that that's going to be good for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow.
I need a therapist.
6:26 already.
Yeah, I know.
Time flies when you're on Prozac. So
what do you want to do? Do you want to go to break?
Why don't we quickly go over the story that you have so that we can get it out of the way and then concentrate on our guest, and then we can go to break.
All right. So this is sort of a sad story, but so Michael Alig, who was a part of the the movie Party Monster with Macaulay mm-hmm. Culkin. He was a club kid back in the 80s. He passed away actually the night Christmas Eve And the reason I bring this up is, he passed away of a heroin addiction.
Right.
But I have a weird connection to him because I dated somebody who was dating him when he passed away. And, I just think that it's really important to, even if, like, I know, Tom, you gave me slack earlier, but even if it's, your ex or, somebody that you once cared about in a sexual or personal way, if somebody's going through a hard time, you should reach out and make sure they're okay, especially right now. I did do that, and I know you didn't like that.
I always say, listen, a train wreck is a train wreck, but, that's just my philosophy. You go through life meeting people. Those that will either aggravate the shit out of you, turn your life upside down, or those that will enrich your life so that you can continue growing as a human.
He enriched my butthole.
Well, and there's that. But, and so that being said, I tend to sort of kind of let things go that don't really bring anything positive in my life. And I move forward with those that I have met that will enhance my journey. Right. Because we're born one day, die the next, and what you do in between really counts. And that's why I say, leave that toxic shit behind. But anyway, go ahead.
I hear what you're saying. I think that, like, losing, as you know, I've lost a lot of people in my life, and walking through that alone is terrible. And knowing how Michael passed away and knowing where my ex is, I know that he's walking through it pretty much alone. And that's scary, especially if he has any addiction issues like Michael did.
Right.
And I think that's why I reached out.
I mean, you don't certainly have to explain your reasons why you reached out to me. I'm just saying, for me, it's just like, it's a lot easier for me to let things go that have caused me pain in the past, because you can't move forward until you do that, I believe. But, if you feel that, that is how you can deal with the news of him losing someone that obviously played a significant role in his life and currently most likely does, given the situation, then do that. I mean, I can't tell you
what not to do,
but I will sit here and,
judge me.
Of course. You're my bitch. Well, I have to.
I'm sorry that we lost him this weekend, and my heart goes out to everybody who he touched and his family. And
And this was the same person that killed someone, by the way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, no,
convicted murder.
Yeah, he was in jail.
Okay. So anyway, we're going to leave you with some music. When we come back, we're going to have our guest of Emerson Collins join us. Again, super funny guy. We're super excited. Here's some music. We will be right back.
She was waiting by the back door, said, "Babe, we gotta leave town. Get your shit, get your suitcase, your dog, your guitar, 'cause we gotta go now, 'cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names, yes, they're coming, just the same. Well, I know you don't want to leave your life. You've had some blood and tears, little joy, little strife, but they're coming. Well, they're coming down the road, yes, they're knapsack full of judgment, hypocrisy and lies, and they're talking so much hateful bullshit they've begun to gather flies. But they're coming, well, don't look them in the eyes, yes, they're coming, no surprise. And with so much terror in our past, how are you so surprised it's come to bite you in the ass? Yes, it's coming. your heels. Yes, it's coming for the kill. And don't forget the whiskey, and don't forget your history. It was never the land to sell or trade. No, don't forget the whiskey, and don't forget your history. It was never the land in the first place. But they're coming just the same. Station where we can get on that train, head out to the wastelands where we can change our names, 'cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names. Yes, they're coming just the same.
Right, well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back from the break after I spilled my drink and all that good stuff all over my equipment. Yay! Because that's how we do it here on Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast. That, of course, was Wastelands by Amanda Barrick. She was one of our guests. Her song is available on iTunes and all the music streaming services out there, so make sure that you go check it out and listen to her, because she's awesome. She does a lot of great spoken word. And look, I've got a little napkin for all you guys. Yay. All right. So listen, we have a guest tonight. I'm super excited. We're going to welcome to the show, of course, our guest, who is Emerson Collins. He's an actor, producer, a TV personality. And I would like to welcome you to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Hello.
Can you hear us? We are certainly going through it. Give me one second, guys. Lord have mercy.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Where is the mouse? Where's the mouse?
Yes?
Yeah, I can hear you, sort of.
Only sort of?
Oh, wait. Oh, now no. I can hear you.
Make sure that the video... Yeah, everything's fine.
Tom. I'm just trying to make it
yeah,
dramatic.
No, I love it. Tom, I think we're good. Anyway, hi, I'm Nick, by the way. I'm the one that always messages you.
I know.
And I'm Tom.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for having me. First of all, I love that you knocked your drink over, because my boyfriend describes me regularly as, quote, flaily. So it's a thing that I do on a regular
Yeah, I don't know what the
well.
Deal is tonight. Like, yeah, Tom is all over the place.
Everything is just happening like crazy. Like, oh my God, I'm like, my $3,000 laptop is covered in fucking Truly.
When we first started the show, I bought a new computer, and we had cocktails, and I knocked the cocktail over on my computer, my brand new laptop. And from then on, we were given sippy cups.
Perfect.
Like, that's it. And now we're back. Yeah. Now we're only drinking Truly. So this is not in a sippy cup. And he just poured it all over his computer, yeah. iPad, everything.
That's okay.
Look, it seems clear that your computers are drunks and we have no judgment.
I love it.
It's been a rough one.
You're coming through and I can hear you, but barely. Can we try putting your headsets back in now that we have something? Let's try to do that. This is what happens when you do a live show, everyone. You know, things just happen and, you know, you just go with the flow. So while the guest, of course, Emerson over there is putting in his headsets, we shall see what happens.
Happens.
How about now?
How about now?
Hello?
Hello?
He's got a set. I can't hear him.
This has been a show.
Yeah, it has been. This has been a show. We're going to get this right. No. It's doing something.
No, I'm going to have to stick with this one.
All right.
Just yell at you.
Well, while you do that, let me go in here.
So, Emerson, how are you? How's your holiday?
It was technological. Just like this. literally, this is what my Christmas and holiday felt like. Doing like FaceTime gift unwrapping with the family, where you're like, no, mom, if you set your phone on the mantle and point it at the room, we get a wide shot. And dad, you hold yours and point it at whoever's opening the present and we'll get the close up. And I'll just sit and direct. The other end.
Yeah,
of
no,
my
it was so weird. Like, I felt like my parents wouldn't stop calling me and FaceTiming me. I don't know if you experienced that, but it was like, I'm not with you, and you can't FaceTime me to make you be with you, so stop calling me constantly.
Yeah, it was a lot of work to set up, like, all the different locations and get everyone on, and then, like, explain to everyone that if you don't point the phone at your face,
Grandpa,
we can't see you.
I literally, I'm looking at your chin right now.
Yeah. And while it's lovely, nobody looks
below. No. Angles. All about angles.
Oh, I'm on FaceTime holding the camera like 2.5 feet above
literally.
My head. Like, oh, this looks
my
insane.
Sister's like, you look amazing. I'm like, I know. Right now I do. But if I were to take the phone down here, not so much.
And for those of you listening at home, you can, I just use a lamp for my light and put the shade on.
And then
on.
It just makes it all look better.
You know, for a filter. But it's a very warm light, which is important for the FaceTime as well.
So, Emerson, I'm going to pause this for a minute. I'm going to hang up and call you again and see if that fixes our audio issue. Because I'm getting text messages that they could barely hear you on your end. Okay? Let's...
Okay, great.
Oh,
sorry.
I got to get up.
Well, so that was a great interview.
Yes, it was.
I'm super excited about it.
Oh, let's see this. Because we're going to literally have to probably do the whole
thing. What is with our tech issues lately?
Yeah, is this any better?
Not really.
Try it again?
Any better?
We're going to have to work with that.
All right. So anyway, we're gonna work with what we got. So let's move on. So Emerson, tell us a little bit about you and everything that you do, because you do a lot and you have done a lot.
I was born in Waco, Texas. No, I'm kidding. Can you imagine?
No, I mean, that's fine.
I'm the Encyclopedia Britannica version of my life story. It's famous for David Koresh. No, so the short version is, I am a jack of all trades, master of none, right? I am a performer. I'm an actor first, but on the journey to doing that, became a producer, producing theater, producing television, producing 3 films with my work husband and work-life partner, Del Shores, who, of course, created Sorted Lives. And then along the way have been a singer, a mover, not a danceress. She's not a danceress. And then we have our own live stream radio show that we have done. Yeah, what I love is being in entertainment and anything and everything that has been necessary to do along the way to make that happen. So yes, we did a reality show for 4 years. The films we produced were about religion and sexuality, spousal abuse, and marriage equality. So obviously we like to talk about some issues. But I love making art in whatever capacity, way, shape, and form that is possible, and looking for the way to say yes to the next thing.
So when you created the Del Emerson Show, like how did that come about, and what is the content that you're putting out?
So really, and this just speaks to what I was just saying, the Del Emerson Show, we started on UBN Radio years ago as an LGBTQ news podcast. You know, I'm sort of obsessed with specifically queer news, and I know a lot of people interested, but you know, your show, people like us are often the way people find out about specifically LGBTQ news, because it doesn't hit the front page, you know, of CNN or MSNBC if it's a local story. And we really wanted to live in that space. Our work, our artistic work, is in that space. And we started doing it because we were trying to raise the money to film a very Sorted Wedding. And it took over 1.5 years to do. And we said, well, this is a thing we can do while we beg people for money to make our movie. So it really fell out of wanting to be creative, wanting to like share and engage with people while trying to do our work.
But over the past couple of years, I mean, especially with the current administration, you've been really talking about voting and talking about getting out there. And like, that is one of the biggest things that right. we've been talking about on this show.
Right.
We've obviously are not Trump supporters. We are so happy to see him out of the White House, but I wanted to hear a little bit about why that was so important for you, and getting the vote out and all of that.
I think there is a thing that understandably happens in marginalized communities, you know, for LGBTQ people, for people of color, for people who are in both of those communities, for people who don't feel that government, that policing institutions, that medical institutions serve them, mm-hmm. and in fact can be dangerous to engage with, you know, for your personal safety. There can be resistance to getting involved, to feeling like one way or the other, it's going to have an impact on your life based on personal experiences. And so we really wanted to speak to the ability of that to be an aspect of how we can affect change as one piece of a very important process, right? You know, it doesn't end with voting. It starts with voting. Voting is the least that you can do in holding your representatives accountable, the representatives that make legislation that affects our healthcare, that affects our equality, that affects our communities, that affects funding. But voting is the first step in that. And so we really felt a call to really challenge at least the people we can reach to engage in the process. I think the election of this president that we are showing to the door, I think demonstrated for a lot of people that no matter how bad you think it is possible for it to get worse. Right. If we don't engage, even when it's not the results we can be passionate about, you know, if it's not your favorite candidate, if it's not speaking to the issues you think personally are most important, all of those are really real and valid, but stepping away from the process, it happens with or without you. And so it was a way for us to challenge our community to be involved, to be engaged, and to start with that step and then move forward from there.
Mm-hmm. And I feel, though, like when you talk about, you know, this whole political revolution that we were going through, you know, seeing people, for example, like Bernie supporters being very staunch about the fact that they wanted Bernie to be the nominee this time around. And then that didn't happen. And then we started to see our community really like jump into like this war of my candidate, my candidate, my candidate, your candidate sucks. And
are you talking about Democrats or Republicans?
I'm talking about Democrats, because there was a lot of infighting just trying to
between Bernie Warren.
And Warren, yep. and all these other people, because obviously there is a progressive movement and it's alive and well and very necessary. There's a lot of things that are going on in our lives that would be made better if government were to focus on the people rather than corporations. But our infighting in the community was just horrendous. I find this time around it was even worse than when Bernie and Hillary Clinton were running against each other. And I feel that that was challenging in the sense of trying to, first and foremost, get a nominee, get behind that nominee, and then push him through the finish line. What are your thoughts on
that? You know, it's interesting. I think anytime anybody becomes too obsessive about a particular candidate over the issues that are why they align with a candidate, I think we get into the cult of personality territory that's unhelpful.
Right.
I think several things occurred this time that are important and necessary for left-leaning, for Democrats, for progressives. You know, there is a long history of asking progressives to show up for centrist policies and centrist candidates. And at a certain point, if you don't address the specific needs, wants, asks, and demands of those people, they will step away and say, fine, do it without us and we'll go another route. And it's, I think, frustrating for people who think the most important thing is to get Trump out. Absolutely. But if you've been telling people for 30 years, 40 years, wait, you know, we have to pander to the couple of state swing states in the national election that matter for the Electoral College. The left side always runs to centrist policies. And I think it's interesting. I think you probably tell I'm compromise oriented. You know, I'm not a firebrand particularly. I don't lean towards extreme statements, but I very much agree with what shouldn't be an extreme statement that many progressives were most passionate about, saying in the middle of a pandemic, if we can't say this is the time when Medicare for all should be possible, when will we ever be able to say that no person in our country should die because they can't afford the healthcare that would keep them alive? You know,
mm-hmm.
there are certain positions that people want to demonstrate as some kind of outlier that most people honestly agree with, but it gets put under a name or a phrase that people find toxic or frustrating. And I think the infighting is frustrating, but it's also a healthy representation of that on the left. At least we all welcome everyone to the conversation, you know, and it's ugly and there's sometimes war wounds as we get out of the battles. But we all showed up. Biden is our elect nominee, and he and Harris and this administration can now be held accountable to the needs of all of the people across the country, but also all of the people within the party who grinned and said, all right, this is the candidate we picked. We are showing up for them. Now they need to address the needs of all of us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yes, it's hard. Yes, it's ugly. I don't think that's ever going to change. Right. You know, I am definitely a listen to all perspectives person, but it's sort of Pollyanna to think it's ever just going to be like, oh, we're all going to be reasonable, because there are fundamental disagreements between the most centrist Democrats and the most fervent progressives that we do have to work through and build compromise is on our side before we even begin to consider a compromise with a Republican.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, so the last political thing I'm going to bring up and ask you is I want to talk a little bit about how you feel about gay Republicans and or gay Trump supporters. We both have people that we know that are Trump supporters, and mm-hmm. we've had many a conversation with them. But the problem is I just don't get it. I don't get how somebody in our community could be supportive of this man. And I kind of wanted to get your feedback on that. Like, what do you think about the whole gay Republican or gay Trump supporter thing?
Well, it's interesting because I like that you separated them, because to me, they are separate. To me, there are gay Trump supporters and then there are gay Republicans.
Same.
Yeah. I think there's a contingent of gay Republicans who hearken back to some like 70s ideal of conservative Republicanism being about small government. Well, it hasn't been about that in a really long time. And I think it's sort of delusional of them to act like that's a major selling point of the current Republican party and movement.
Mm-hmm.
Gay Trump supporters, I think they, if you look at them, they're almost exclusively, there's a handful that aren't, but primarily cisgender white gay men, right? Like me, you know, who live at the top of the privilege pyramid, so to speak, within our community. And the sort of the only thing that was keeping them from having the benefits of being white men in society was the gay, and same-sex marriage helped them achieve basically cultural equality. So they can vote for old school pocketbook ideas. They're not worried about needing, they don't need the Equality Act. So there's this element of they got their equal rights and went home, right? And then, oh, I like this mouthy guy. I've reached the point where I don't know how to engage with that person because they know. You know, they do know what they're doing and they just don't care. And I don't know that we can teach people empathy. I think there's some people you have to walk past on the way to winning the battle. And some people you can, there is ignorance and then there is spite. You know, and I do think there are people where I come from in the South that there is still some ignorance related to our community and these policies and the impact of them. And then there's people that are just spitefully privileged and it's not worth our time to argue with those people, unless they're people like Richard Grenell and they run for election somewhere or they are given power within our government,
mm-hmm.
Then it's worth shutting those people down.
I think it's really important that you brought up, the concept of empathy. I feel like our current administration doesn't even understand what that means. And I think that Joe Biden and everything that he's been through really brings empathy to the table. And honestly, like, the entire American people have literally not been supported at all. I mean, even Trump supporters have not been supported at all. And finally, we have somebody in the White House who hopefully soon, January 20th, we have somebody who can empathize with what the average American goes through. Yes, Biden has a lot of money and Biden has, you know, gained his wealth and whatnot. But the reality is he has lost a lot as well. And he can finally, we have somebody that can empathize with the people of America.
But he's a public servant. He's someone who's served in public for 40 plus years, lost, you know, two of his children, his first wife, you know, has given a lot, has made a lot of mistakes along the way, but who hasn't, mm-hmm. right? We all make mistakes, but is looking to repair more so than divide a nation in the middle of a pandemic when we're all trying to all get to the same goal, which is to let's nip this pandemic in the butt, get everybody vaccinated, try to, you know, get to where we need to get so that we can all start being able to congregate again and be human and have that emotional connection on a personal level again and be able to get together with your parents and grandparents, etc. And I think that in that aspect, there is no better person to do that than this man.
Yep.
Because of his compassionate way of looking at things and because of what he's gone through in life and also his experience,
yeah.
Right? And when you think about someone like Trump, for example, who was...
Why do we have to think about him still?
Unfortunately, we do for the next 20 plus days. This is someone who's always... crave the limelight. He doesn't care about anybody else. He just cares about, you know, his name being in the media and ego and making money and being able to slap Trump on any building and be able to charge a licensing fee. And that's all he cares about. He doesn't care about the American people. And when you think about things, for example, like he recently did, he sat on a bill that needed to pass because the American people needed that help. And he literally just sat on it. And he didn't do it because he didn't know what he was doing. He did it out of spite because he knew that that would cause the media to really put his name back out there when he was sort of kind of like
falling away
because he was golfing for 2 or 3 days. And wait,
did you say golfing or golfing?
Golfing.
He's bilingual.
Golfing.
Golfing. Bitch, I think in two languages and speak in three.
Like three. All right, so I'm going to move on. Let's leave Trump. Let's leave politics.
Bye, Felicia.
I want to talk about Have Yourself a Merry Little Lockdown. So I was able to watch like about a half hour of it. I'm still going to watch the whole thing. It's great. I want to talk about where this idea came from and what it's all about.
So my boyfriend, Blake MacIver, and I, obviously being stuck at home for 9 months because we are definitely unessential as artists to making the world work. Early on in the pandemic, Dell and I, my producing partner, we did a live stream benefit. We raised over $80,000 for 23 nonprofit theater companies with LGBTQ focus. And then Dell and I started doing our show live streaming as well as something to do and keep sharing and engaging with people. And so it evolved out of that. Blake and I have never done a show together, though we've both been performers. And we had friends ask us, would we do a little birthday show as a surprise for his husband in Palm Springs? And we were like, we have literally nothing to do. Working on this would be wonderful. And we had a great time doing that. And their friends were really sweet. And we said, you know, we could do this. And a theater out of San Antonio asked us if we would do a show. So it started, our first show was I Dreamed a Dream Girl. And the joke of that title is that I sing like Diet Josh Groban, and Blake has sung in gospel choirs since he was a child. So I definitely am Les Mis oriented, and he is more Dream Girls oriented. So we did that one, had a blast. The theater was wonderful. So then we did a Halloween show, Once Upon a Lockdown, that was a fairy tale and witch themed, and then getting to Christmas. I grew up in a family where like Christmas is the sport that we play as a family.
Yeah,
like right. It's our sport. It's intense. I was in a pageant growing up that started rehearsals in August. Christmas was significant in our house.
Wait, hold on, pause. What? What pageant were you in?
The First Baptist Church of Houston, you're welcome, did a pageant called Pageant, a Christmas Spectacular. And it was broadcast on NBC at Christmas for like 1991. 50 sheep, a camel, a 500 voice choir, a 45-minute concert in the middle of the show. I mean, full Christmas spectacular. Wow. Growing up, there's so many photos of me as a little shepherd boy running around a church.
Oh, I'm going to look that up later.
But so we said, and let's do a Christmas show. You know, I obviously can't be with my family in Texas. We have lots of friends and families and fans that we've become close with. And we'll just do a fun little show as a little bit of a way to make money because on unemployment here.
Same.
But you know, we made $20 tickets. Like, we're going to do it from our living room, but give people a fun show. So we did an hour and 40-minute show, pieces of some 37 songs, including a 10-minute Love Actually medley because that's Blake's favorite Christmas movie. Complete with a hymn sing-along. So just lots of like what we love and a way for us without leaving our house to connect with people, share a little of the holiday season spirit with people. And honestly, I've had bonkers mental health issues this year with my anxiety. I've talked a lot about on my show with the impact of this. And having this to work on every evening, you know, for an hour or so, putting it together, gave us something to do that we could then share. So it was a delight.
Now, have you done anything with Blake before, or was this like one of the first?
Yeah, no, this is our first. This year was our first, like, we've joked for years now about, oh, we should do a thing, but we've been busy doing separate things. We actually met being booked to sing on a show together, but just doing, you know, separate solos. So yeah, this was our first for real series of creative adventures together, and we got through it and had fun doing it.
And that's how you do it, though. You have to be able to, like, have fun and grab your partner and say, like, you know what, bitch, we're doing this. We are doing this.
But because if I don't do this, work with your partner.
But what is the alternative? If we don't do this, we're going to go bonkers in this house, being that we can't do anything and go anywhere. Yes. I would be like, yeah, bitch, we're doing this. Put on the goddamn motherfucking hat. Let's do this.
People were like, there are so many costume changes. I was like, look, once you start on a project without a deadline and nothing else to do today, you end up in yellow ball gowns carrying fans doing white Christmas carols.
I also need a ho-ho onesie, but that's beside the point. As a lot of our listeners know, I came from the theater community. I lost my job due to COVID as well. And I kind of wanted to just chat with you, like, how has it been for you? How have you felt, you know, the theater community respond? And, or, I mean, so many people lost their jobs, their income. Like, how's it been for you and your friends?
You know, it is horrifying to watch, is the only way I could describe it. Our year started, I produced a play and was in a play at the same time in January and February. We were in Dallas doing, in the second week of rehearsals for a show I was producing of Dell's there. We had another show planned to do in August. And of course, all of that fell apart. And people looking at, you know, the actors are always the face, right, of an industry and the problems. I think what so many people don't realize in arts organizations being unable to function is how many other people, you know, the office staff, the ticket managers, the crew, the set designers, the builders, the costume houses, like how far reaching the arts industry is specifically for live performance. You know, the film industry has gotten a lot of attention and it's been really hard, but they're working things out. Live spaces where the performers need to share space together, where the audience need to be right next to each other, is so far away from having a workable a solution, and it's a billions and billions of dollar industry across the country that has no great safety net. Yep. You know, right. Early on, we saw lots and lots of benefits, right? But as this continues to go on, you're looking at artistic organizations that really do operate on a subscriber base and a month-to-month basis on ticket sales. Because Broadway has and huge problems, has gotten a lot of attention, and there's really significant things there. But it's your community level organizations, you know, your regional theaters, your community theaters, the local theater companies that rent spaces that will have the hardest time coming back, who were the hardest hit. It's people who have a part-time job in addition to working and making a theater company happen, who lost the small income that's a combination, right, of passion and a stipend almost income that makes life work. That is the hardest, was the hardest I think, even compared to the large organization.
Yeah, no, and I 100% agree. And I think what's interesting is that, like, when you think about, you know, movies coming back and people streaming stuff, somebody said something to me probably about a year ago, where when you walk into a theater, and if you sit down and that theater is empty, there's something that you're missing. And there's almost like this, like, feeling of loss and not, like, fulfillment. But if you walk into a movie theater and it's empty, you get excited. Because theater not only brings connection, but it really fuels the local economy and the local people. Like, it literally, it's all about connecting and bringing people together.
Yes. And, you know, it's a beating heart of the, to me, you know, the arts, right, are the epitome of a civilization. You know, can you, do you have enough to eat? Do you have enough to live? Do you have a roof over your head before you can begin exploring what humanity means, what we mean to each other, how we engage with each other, or just laugh and be entertained and sing and dance together? Mm-hmm. And so when that goes, a lot of the central meeting points of our communities fall apart. And it does. It supports restaurant industries. It supports so many
other things that the arts have to do with beyond simply seeing a show, and that there's not a national theater endowment. There are a number of artists, actually. Jeremy O'Harris of Slave Play has been really pushing for a national arts organization, and I hope that that's something that we as artists, as we come back together, can push for. You know, an arts cabinet secretary. Why isn't that exist when you consider how many billions of dollars and people are involved in these? It is not a frivolous add-on to a society. It's one of the greatest contributors and commentaries. It challenges us as people. It entertains us. It gives us a place to meet and share and commune. Right. It's not an extra. It's a vital piece of our culture. Mm-hmm.
And I think people forget about that. I think people think, oh, well, why am I going to support theater and the arts right now when everything else is going haywire? And that's why, because it connects us. We continue to tell stories. We literally can keep our historic references in theater. Like, literally, I've learned so much from theater. I'll never forget when I finally connected to theater and it meant something to me. And I sat there sobbing and I saw that show, I think about 8 times, because it meant something to me. Right. And it made me realize that theater has so much power, and art, the artists behind all that work. And like, people don't realize, like you were saying, there are so many people that go into one show. I mean, so many people lost their livelihoods. It's insane to me.
And it's a very specific skill set, all the way from your stage managers and your builders and, you know, that people who have honed crafts to specifically make this one thing happen, mm-hmm. That don't have other opportunities for those skill sets. So, yeah, we've done everything we could. We're really proud of being able to write small checks to some theaters that we have connections to. But it is a drum I keep beating. If you are someone fortunate sitting at home with a little bit of extra funds, consider looking at the places that you would go in a normal year, the theaters you would attend, what are the shows you would see, the concerts, opera, whatever your particular brand of art that you enjoy is, see how you can support them right now. You know, advanced subscriber sales, just a donation that they will put to good use. Yeah. Artists have long made incredible things happen on shoestring budgets, but it means that there was not padding for a moment like this. So if you can help, find the one that's directly relevant to you and your space and your community and contribute something. Full disclosure, y'all, I've been sending $20 a week to whatever I was passionate about that week. I am not sitting on a pile of money, but all of us doing a little bit adds up to a lot of things, and no contribution is too small to not be meaningful to the place you put it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. One of the things that people fail to realize is when you look at theater and you look at the therapeutic side of it, right? The fact that you can get out and you can forget about the world around you and immerse yourself in a world created by gifted, talented, amazing people and lose yourself for that 1, 2, 3 hours of a show. And the benefits that that has on the human body, on the human spirit, on the spirit of, being able to share that experience with other people. You know, when you think about, for example, my experience going to see The Lion King or going to see Wicked and being able to just like get enthralled in the experience that the person sitting next to me is going through, and that we're feeling in a sense of we're in a different world, mm-hmm. right? That in itself is a huge loss for the theater community, because that experience is what keeps people coming back, right? Looking for that way of disconnecting from what we know, what stresses us, and going into a world that is completely and utterly magical. Mm-hmm. And when you lose that, you lose that connection. And you can't replicate that by doing digital versions of shows and putting them online, because part of the experience is being able to be in the room with other humans, mm-hmm. and experience the same thing.
And also to see or connect to a story that relates to yourself. I mean, right. When I was talking about the show earlier, obviously it was a gay love story, that I saw it at Actors Theater of Louisville. And ever since then, I was like, this is why theater is so powerful. And I recently did a show, at the Long Wharf Theater that, portrayed a gay couple in the 1950s, an African-American man and a Caucasian man, mm-hmm. Who, fell in love, and they were in 1950s Texas. And it was so terrible for them. But seeing that story on stage, it was like, I finally connected to it. I mean, before your Love, Simon, before all of these, you know, massive movies came out, that was our outlet. That was our place to go and congregate and literally see and tell our stories.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, it tells our stories, it shares our histories. It, at the very least, right, it entertains us. And hopefully beyond that, it challenges us. It asks mm-hmm. us to look at experiences that are ours differently, to look at experiences we can't relate to that are someone else's, and consider them in a way we've never considered them before. You know, at its best, it makes us better people, better as a communities to consider each other differently and with new eyes. And it is a huge loss to not have it. And I will say, people are doing geniusly, incredibly creative, innovative things with technology online. There's brilliant stuff happening. And I think it's a great addition to what we can do with the arts going forward. But it's certainly not a permanent replacement for the live communal experience.
Oh, absolutely. I agree 100%. So all I can say is, Emerson, thank you.
Wait, do we want to talk about this?
Do you want to?
I don't know. Do you still have time? Do you want to jump into the question? Okay. So so I thought it would be fun to have you join us for this question. We got a question from a listener. It's interesting and I relate to it
in many ways.
So this individual is having a problem. Excuse me. So back in June, when the first lockdown happened in the UK, this individual had his friend come and stay over and he sleeps on a sofa. I'm sorry, I've got something stuck in my throat.
Not the first time, but okay.
I wish. Years ago, whenever they would get drunk together, they would end up having sex every single time. He's straight, though, 1,000%. And
if that ever was a thing, but okay.
And so now he moved in, and the first couple of nights, they were having sex. And on the third night, the gentleman asked him, well, why are we doing this? And he said it was because he thought, this is what I had to do to stay here. And then he explained that that wasn't the case. He went on to say, on the odd occasion, they would, you know, drink a little bit. Something would happen, maybe a little bit of sex, nothing crazy. The problem is he has been living with this individual since June, and he's grown to love him more than just a friend. So I'm going to say what he said now. He's all I think about. Whenever he's not around, I get depressed. And when he gets home, I'm more happy than I can be until he starts talking about his girlfriend. And so here we are talking about this individual who is now quarantined with his friend. They've slept together. He's in love with him. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't want to lose him as a friend, but he also doesn't want to make him leave. So his question is, I don't want to lose him as a friend. He means everything to me. Any advice would be a blessing.
I mean,
let me start.
Okay. Let's start simply, okay. Right? This at the simplest level, this is an experience we've all had of unrequited love. Mm-hmm. You are into somebody who is not into you the way you want to mm-hmm. want them to be. And you cannot change that person, because he did ask, right? He was like, how do I make this stop? You know, making feelings go away. No, literally no one anywhere has the answer to that. And anybody who's that, like, you know, getting under somebody else, but you can't, it's a lockdown. The sharing the space with somebody you have this level of feelings about is really, really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you know, there is not a solution to that aspect when you consider you're being a good friend, providing this man a space because he got kicked out, right? That mm-hmm. was the first part.
Yep.
You're being a really good friend. What you need to do is guard your own heart. You need, like, that's the first piece. You have got to guard your heart.
But how do you do that when you're literally living with somebody? Does he ask him to leave? You know?
Well, I mean, I would say starting the discussion of finding him another place to live is your best, you know, no, certainly don't kick somebody out.
Right.
But moving him in the direction of another more permanent location, whether it's that girlfriend or another friend, is in your best interest, because they've been there since June. You've been a really good friend, mm-hmm. but now you need to take care of yourself.
Right. And, you know, not only that, think about girlfriend. Supposedly he's 100% straight. And so we all know how these sordid straight relationships end up, and you know, you have one person who really is not ready to identify or accept the fact that he is sleeping with a person of the same sex, and someone who is completely immersed in the lifestyle, and you're both in the same space. Obviously, he's got needs, and he's using an opportunity for the fact that he's in your space to take care of his needs, but also take care of yours. But then the messages get confused, and you're sort of kind of thinking about him in this way when all he really needs is just satisfaction in this way, and things sort of kind of get lost in translation. I think one of the first things, first and foremost, you need to do is have a very open and frank conversation with this individual. Throw it all out on the table and say, listen, this is how I feel about you. And you being in my space is really exasperating a level of anxiety for me that's making it difficult. We need to talk about how we need to proceed. Mm-hmm. Do we want to continue to do this and potentially end up in a really good space for both of us? Or do you need to really start looking at where you need to go and move on? Mm-hmm. Because I can't do both.
I think what's right? also really important is that yeah. there are moments in the story where he's talking about the fact that he's unhappy when he's not there. You know, he's literally sad when this individual talks about his girlfriend. It hurts him. I'm like, this person is literally putting them through a breakup every day. Like, he is breaking the guy's heart every single day, and that's going to leave a huge scar.
Well, yeah, because you're essentially grieving something that doesn't exist, right?
Right.
And also, this you should consider, too, that the friend has some things to work through in addition to, like, because labels, whatever, but, like, identifying the activities this person enjoys. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they showed up at your house and had sex with you because they felt like they had to because they were staying with you, that they felt a transactional aspect to your sexual involvement. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, whether they're dealing with self-esteem issues related to your friendship, that they didn't think they could just stay with you because you offered, they have some things to work through that you could be a supportive friend of, possibly, but not while you're dealing with the pain this person is causing you. And
right.
you should say, unintentionally, it's not obviously not this person's fault you're in love with them. However, there are things they are doing that are causing you pain on a daily basis. And being a good friend should not come at the expense of taking care of yourself first.
100%.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
But so at the base level of this story, though, do you believe in the Kinsey scale? Like, what is going on with this individual? He's sleeping with his friend just to have a couch? It feels weird to me.
Well, I mean, the couch, the transaction thing, like, sounds like a self-esteem issue, and you certainly don't want someone feeling that way. But that they hooked up before, but only when they were drunk, certainly speaks to many people's early explorations of any kind of sexuality outside of strict heterosexuality. There's often a like, oh, if I'm, you know, inebriated, my inhibitions go down and I can do something that I actually want to do. Now, who knows where that means that person lands, whether it's occasional, whether it's a slight tendency towards bi or pansexuality, or, you know, running from a full-fledged homosexuality. Certainly that's their journey to explore, but there is something there that's non-100% heterosexual, despite the protestations to that effect.
Agreed. I think 100%. It's just, to me, you know, he's hurting himself more in allowing his friend to remain there and not have that conversation and say, you know, we really need to think about how you being here and us having shared that experience or experiences is affecting me now in my own space. Not only that, think about the emotional taxation that this has on both of them, and then multiply that by 20 or 30 because of COVID, mm-hmm. right? You can't do nothing. You're already stressed about that. You may not have a job. You might be unemployed.
Yeah.
This person, there's a reason why he's in your house. And so all of these things really compound into a very, very difficult situation.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me a lot about my relationship with a certain individual. I'm not going to say names because
it's probably Steve, but that's okay.
It's actually not.
Not saying names to protect the guilty.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So when we've talked about it on the show before, when I was 16, I started sleeping with my best friend in high school, and I've slept with him, I mean, until current. But like, I don't see him anymore. You know what I mean? Like, right. So it's different. And the last time we spent a weekend together, we were both single at the time, and he has now identified himself as bisexual. But the reality is, he never dates men. And we had a long conversation about it. But I told him straight up, I was like, if you ever get married, I don't think I can come to your wedding. Like, it would hurt too badly. And now I'm what, 33 now? Mm-hmm. So I've spent all this time literally pining over somebody and loving somebody that I could never be with.
Right.
And it has caused so much damage. The fact that, like, I don't want to go to my best friend's wedding is crazy to me.
Right.
So my advice for this individual would be, have an honest conversation and literally walk away. Walk, like, you need to have an honest conversation. Have him move out of your house. Let him know how you're feeling, but you need to walk away before you damage the relationship so bad you're not even talking anymore.
Or damage yourself to an emotional point where you put yourself at a point in where you are now emotionally unstable, mentally exhausted, and to the point where you could potentially put yourself at risk, mm-hmm. physically, emotionally.
One of the hardest things to accept, right? It's the easy thing to say and the hardest thing to believe is that you are worthy of more, you deserve more.
Right.
We will debase ourselves to accept the tiniest morsels from someone because of what we want to give them. And in the middle of that feeling of, I will take whatever you are willing to give me because I want to give, I want you. The hardest thing is to step back and say, I am worthy of more than this, but you are. And I hope that he knows that, you know, you are worthy of and deserving of someone who can reciprocate all of the things that you are trying to give to this person who does not have them for you.
Yeah.
Truth on a stick. All right. Well, listen, all I can say to our friend who took the time to write in is really explore your options.
And we love you, and we hope you figure it out.
Yes. Seriously, because
and we want wonderful things for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we want wonderful things for everyone that, you know, takes the time to engage in this world, not even just our show, just engage with humanity in general. It's like we want to be able to live and share this globe that we share in a way that is conducive and positive for everyone.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you find yourself in a situation like this, you really have to do the work yourself to try to get yourself out of this situation so that you're not constantly being, you know, hurt every day as a result. It's just really tragic.
You need to know that you're not second best. You need somebody who wants you. Like, literally, the way you want this individual, you want somebody to feel that way about you. And I'm beating a dead horse now because, obviously.
Clearly.
But you are getting to share from your own wisdom, from your experience.
Right. But I'm also talking about current situations. But anyway.
Right.
Okay, it's healthy. But make sure that you're number one, like, not only for yourself, but your partner should see you as number one as well and put you first and want to be with you as well.
Well, I mean, one of the healthiest things that you can do for yourself is put yourself number one, right?
Or not date a Steve.
Be your own priority, because no one's going to prioritize you the way you can. And once you do that, once you find your peace, find your way, find a way to be able to be good with you, then you can move on into being good with others. It is impossible to try to be good to someone, try to support someone and put them on a pedestal if you yourself are not supporting yourself and being you're 100% before you can share yourself with anyone else. And I feel that you see a lot of that in the gay community, in where you have broken people trying to sustain a relationship when they themselves can't even stand being in their own skin. Mm-hmm. And that is a lot of gay men in our community. I mean, we are a very vanity-driven, socially structured group of people that look at things from a how much biceps you have and you know, how, you know, are you fat or
are you femme,
are you masculine, are you, you know, can you figure out what the hell you want to do? And so I think that one of the best things that you can do for yourself is take some time to learn about you and be you, accept you, get yourself to 100% before you try to give yourself to someone else, because there's nothing worse than having to deal with the fact that you're insecure and trying to maintain a partner in that aspect as well. It's just incredibly taxing on everyone that's involved.
Yes. I say, refuse to be the frame for someone else's painting.
Seriously.
Oh my God, I love that.
You find someone you can paint a new picture with together.
That's amazing. And that easel will be 100% gold and worth every cent you spent on it.
Yes.
Or yourself.
Correct. So, Emerson, thank you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day. You're in California, so you still probably have about another 3 hours of daylight left.
Yeah, except it's been raining all day. It's very exciting. It feels like we're, you know, somewhere with actual weather.
I should also say really quick before we let you go that I connected to Emerson on Instagram because of your amazing photos.
My thirst bucket, like the things that get, I get text messages from friends that just say Emerson, period.
Yeah, literally.
He was like, but oh my also, God.
But Tom, it speaks to what you were saying, you know, joking, of course. Like, yes, it's thirsty and pandery. There's many of the ideals of the community I'm fortunate to genetically fit into. Mm-hmm. But also I use it to promote my stupid radio show that I have a delightful time doing and to talk about the things I want to talk about. And I'm rewarded by, yes, it's lots of Speedos for people listening at home. Because I was a weird skinny kid before I came out and skinny was suddenly idealized in the young queer community. But I get sweet notes from people who say, because of you, I bought a Speedo and I wore it to the beach and it made me feel happy. Like we're all messing our way through this world and through this community together. And I like to treat that as a fun space. People can get information, can be entertained, can be intermused. And yes, sometimes I can pander just to get likes and comments for my self-esteem.
Well, it's working, girl. It's working.
Clearly, because I'm like.
He was like, Tom, look at this.
Have you seen this? I was
like. But like, yep, I think my mom does the same. She says it this way. Have you seen this?
Proud of you, son.
I was like, Daddy.
Truly, thank you both so much. What you do here is so important, and providing a space for our community and to talk about the issues that you talk about and to welcome people. It's really, really wonderful, and it's such a pleasure to join you.
Seriously, it's ours to have you on the show and to have someone like-minded that does the work that we do, that you do, in telling queer stories and news and bringing people the information they need just so that they know where we are, right, as a community and what's happening all around us. And I think that that's important. Information, knowledge is power. And
absolutely.
And with that, you know, all that's left to say is please tell us how our listeners can find you, plug your show, tell us, you know, where they can find it. You know, is it a podcast show? Can they find it on iTunes or is it a YouTube specific show? Give us all the details and how people can get a hold of you.
Yes, you can find me on Instagram at Emerson Collins. My website, emersoncollins.com, has all of our work in the various places you can find it. And the Dell and Emerson Show is live Tuesdays and Fridays at 4 p.m. Pacific, streaming to both my Facebook page and Dell's and to my YouTube channel. So you can also subscribe on YouTube and watch them at any point. We get lots of people who watch them back later, but you can join and play in the comments live on Tuesdays and Fridays.
Fantastic. So amazing. we'll have all of that information actually added to tonight's post. So if you want to go and click on a link and get there to his website, YouTube, etc., we'll do that for you. We'll do all that work so that it's just easy. Click and enjoy. So
yes.
Emerson, once again, sorry for the technical difficulties. You know, it's the
no and mine. Apologies to your listeners. You know, microphones. It's raining here. I'm blaming it on the rain.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Not meaning that. It's just regular raining.
And it's 2020, so we're just sticking to that.
Uh-huh.
Correct. Thank you both so much.
All right.
Thank
bye,
you.
Honey.
All right, well, ladies and gents, that, of course, was Emerson Collins. We're going to have all the details for his show available on tonight's post. And, you know, he's just incredible. I really, really enjoyed having a conversation with him. He seems like someone that, like us, although we're messy, he seems someone that's very versed in what happens mm-hmm. in our community and is doing great work in trying to make sure that other people are aware of that as well.
Yeah, so. No, I've... like loved him. So
he's awesome. I think that we should do a take two and have him come back in the new year and be a co-host.
Oh my God, that would be great.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I really digged his energy and I think he would be amazing.
Yeah, for like the whole show.
Right. And we should figure out how to, you know,
we can make do sure. StreamYard or Zoom or something.
We'll do something.
That would be great.
We'll figure it out. So anyway, throwing that out there in the universe, I know it's going to happen. Emerson Collins will join us at some point as a guest host. We're excited. Let's jump into some of the stuff that we've got to cover so that we can wrap this up and take it home.
Oh, yeah, that's me. All right. So everybody, here we go. All right. So Mama Kim's Minute. Number one, Washington, D.C. bans gay and trans panic defense in a criminal case, which is amazing.
Another jurisdiction to add to the list.
Number two, Taiwan's highest grossing LGBTQ plus film is now on Netflix.
Yay.
Number three, Dan Levy is working on a rom-com. I will watch it. And he may star in it.
Yeah, of course you're going
to watch it. Number four, watch emotional trailer for Russell T. Davis AIDS drama. It's a sin.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's Mama Kim's Minute in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. Those stories will also be posted on tonight's post. You can click on the links, read them for yourself, so that way you know what's going on in our community.
What do we have next? So this week's Gay Talk Term, of course, brought to you by GayRealEstate.com, is Chicken Recruiter.
You got it. You got
a toilet queen who has nothing to do with you unless you are young.
Right. So for those of you who don't know what a toilet queen is, someone who hangs around in bathrooms and, you know, hookup.
Yeah, places. You would know all about that.
Yeah, of course. Hello.
All right.
I was young and crazy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, on this day in gay history, of course, brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com,
where the USA, when December 28th, 1969, a gay group announced plans to form or become separatist community, meaning they're all going to get together and sort of kind of just like do what I've always wanted to do. So Los Angeles chapter of Gay Liberation Front announces its intent to establish Stonewall Nation, the world's first legally recognized gay separatist community, by moving several hundred gay people to Alpine County, California. The plan is to recall the county's government and elect an all-gay government. The plan never comes to fruition. Basically, that's P-Town now.
Mm-hmm.
So, although there's a lot of straight people in P-Town, but I think sort of kind of the idea is just get everybody in the community in one area so that you can just make it a gay mecca.
Yeah, you know? That was like the gay Mormon church.
Right. We have a couple, by the way, mm-hmm. areas. You know, you think of Fire Island, you think of P-Town, you think of Palm Springs. So there's a lot of towns, Key West, mm-hmm. And where a lot of...
But are all the local officials gay?
Not that we know if the local officials are gay, but the idea is the same. It's to sort of get all the gay people to sort of kind of support and go to
gay
one.
Mecca.
Yeah. Hello. So... it exists in today's society. All right, ladies and gents, thank you so much for joining us. If you love the show, make sure you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as our episodes are published. Next week, because it's me, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not done yet. I forgot a whole thing. You can also support us on Patreon. With Patreon, you, our listeners, can help support the show with a monetary donation. Those donations can be in any denomination of a dollar or more, and we collect those monthly, and we're super, super appreciative of those who are currently Patreon, so thank you for that. Next week, we welcome the incredible Dr. Evan Goldstein back for the very first Tales from the Tale of 2021. Make sure that you tune in for that because we're going to have fun with the great doctor. I don't know. We're thinking about something. We should surprise him with something.
Yeah.
Something out of left field.
All right. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you to our guest, Emerson Collins. It was amazing having you on the show today. It's been so great to connect with you on social media. All's information will be on our post tonight. And don't forget, you can get your discount today for the Future Method. Each time you clean out with water or enemas, delicate tissues are harmed and cells are damaged, increasing chances of injury and or STDs. The first of its kind, doctor-developed formula gently cleanses before you play without hurting your bum. And now you can use code GAYTALK20 for 20% off, valid for one purchase or one subscription per person.
Yas, queen.
Shall we?
Shall we?
Put a dental dam on this?
Put anything
cellophane?
On it. Anything.
Maybe a rubber?
Wrap it up.
All
put
right.
Some burlap on that shit.
Oh, God, not that. Our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under audio podcast. It is also available as a free download on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher Radio. You can find us on social media, Facebook, Gaytalk 2.0, Instagram, Gaytalk 2.0, Twitter, at gaytalk20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gaytalk20.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, just head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab. There you can leave comments, suggest topics, submit a question for the cast or an individual host, or you can call us at 334-GAY-TALK. If you need those digits, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, even amidst all the technical difficulties that we've been having. And you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. I would like to thank you all for joining us tonight. Ladies and gents, thank you. And that is our show. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.